Welcome back to Camro Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is a solo podcast, but it's not a Q&A. It is 13 thoughts after turning 31 years old. This is a popular style of post I've done on my Instagram and for my email list over the years. And last year, I turned it into a podcast episode. For episode 156, I did 30 thoughts at the age of 30. But in my old age at 31, I decided to shorten it down, flip it around, and do 13 thoughts at the age of 31. And this time round, I wanted to explain each of these 13 concepts a little bit deeper. And you can expect to learn about a whole host of different ideas, including optimization versus perfection, becoming interesting, time management, and even discomfort and change, and why sometimes it's better to be in a worse situation than one where you're just a little bit sore and not uncomfortable enough to make a change. I am loving the podcast at the moment. I'm on such a good run of episodes. I'm enjoying hosting, I'm enjoying creating, and I've got some great ones scheduled, both in terms of recording, but also to be recorded in the coming weeks and months. And I want to ask you to make sure, if you're new here or you're somebody that listens regularly but isn't subscribed, to make sure you are subscribed. Hit the follow button if you're on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify and support the show. Also, I am battering away at the old YouTube a little bit without too much success. I now have over 300,000 views on YouTube, which is really cool. But I think I've still got around 800 subscribers. So if you are interested in being a supporter on there and seeing more visual content, then please do navigate yourself across to YouTube, search Campbell Conversations on there, and you'll find my channel, Colin Campbell, and hit the subscribe button. I'm hoping to hit over 1,000 by the end of this calendar year. Now, I love these solo episodes. I love the response to them. I've got another Q&A coming up for 219. Before that, you're going to hear from Chris Marabo, who reversed his aging by 33%. That'll be next Sunday. And then the week after that, we have Ross Harkness, the master of self-mastery, for episode 217. So that's a little bit of a taster of what's to come. I share this every single time with my email list. So at the bottom of the show notes, there's a link to my email list. So please make sure you are on that for all insights on the podcast. But that's quite enough from me just now. The music's going to play and you're going to hear from me as well, discussing my 13 thoughts at the age of 31 years old. Back with this solo episode, and it is going to be my 13 thoughts at the grand old age of 31. And I want to go in depth on each of these 13 and really spend some time delving into these concepts that have not completely changed since my 30th birthday. You can listen back to, I think, episode 156 when I did the 30 thoughts at 30. A lot of these will overlap in terms of different concepts and ideas, but I've maybe verbalized them or positioned them in a different way. And the first of those is win offline to win online. The first time I wrote this down was back in December 2022, and it was something that I wrote on Instagram where I wrote win off Insta to win on Insta. But this applies to all online platforms and all aspects of life, really, because almost nothing that happens on social media is going to enable you to win. So to be seen to win online and publicly get that admiration, you need to win offline to actually enable that. The people that you see winning are not in a winning position based on what they're doing on social media. Of course, you've got people that push forward content and create a sales funnel and things like that. But the vast majority of people you see, they're winning because of the status or achievement that they've obtained offline. So really think about that and act accordingly, because so many people are spending a lot of time on social media just consuming. And the people that are really winning are the people that are achieving things offline to then come online and talk about them and then further their goals through that. They had to win offline first. The work had to take place away from the screen. Do not mistake the map for the territory. That's a phrase that I've started to learn a lot about recently. Don't miss the wood for the trees. The time spent on Instagram or social media is just that. It's time. And I'm not telling you to become a digital nomad, but I am reminding you that if winning online and being seen to have status is a goal of yours, there's a lot that needs to go into it beforehand. And it really matters what you're doing and showing up and talking about offline. And when you do come online, then you can benefit from sharing that story, sharing those insights and moving forward on that basis, rather than thinking that online is the route to all freedom in that regard. And I'm saying this as somebody that has created a personal brand as a platform on Instagram and LinkedIn and with the podcast, but so much of what happens and I get to share on there is work that I do away from when I'm on those apps and consuming content on there. Number two, tolerant with others, strict with one's self. this is an idea that's extrapolated out from a Stoic philosophy, and I know that I can take the strictness, so I am strict with myself. I can tolerate the expectations that I place on myself, the standards that I hold myself to. I've got full view over my circumstances, and I know what I'm capable of. And even what I have done previously as a track record to prove to myself that this is correct to hold myself to that standard. Whereas in contrast, most people, I don't have that oversight. I don't have that insight into what they're up to, what their circumstances are, what they are capable of. So I've got a higher tolerance and level of acceptance of the choices that they make and the behaviors that they choose as well. It doesn't mean that I don't get sad or disappointed if someone I know is clearly underachieving or not exploring their potential, positive potential that they have. But I don't have the right at that point to really not tolerate it and like not stand for it. I accept those people's decisions and their actions because it impacts themselves overall. Equally, I will say that the people closest to me, the ones that I really truly care about, I am able to have harder conversations with them. And while I'm still tolerant of the choices they make, I can make it known to them that I believe that they're capable of doing more and pushing forward in the right direction and really achieving something that's special rather than drifting through life. And I appreciate that from people around me as well, because I'm strict to myself, so the people who are in my corner and really believe in me push me in the right direction. I've noticed it when I've launched the podcast masterclass. The people that have really known I should be putting something out there to help people with something that I'm good at and can help them with, they've really been in my corner saying to me, oh, did you not say it was coming out this week? And I'll be like, oh, I haven't quite managed the launch email sequence yet, or the landing page. I'm just playing with this. And they're like, oh, but you filmed it in October, Colin. I thought you said you were going live. And I'm like, fuck. Those are the people that I actually really value. So they're being strict with me, but I'm also like understanding that I can't be that strict with other people if I don't know what their circumstances are. So people that are really close to you, you can be a little bit more strict with, but I'm certainly tolerant of what other people are up to as long as it makes them happy or it doesn't impact me negatively. Number three, the Regent Beta Paradox is true. This is something I've spoken about a lot with Dr. Julie Gunner and then more recently Lauren Johnson on the show. And the concept is this: sometimes the more distressing events are actually the things which force you forward to make positive change. So the paradox is, you would think that somebody being in a really terrible situation is the worst possible thing for them, but sometimes because of how bad that situation is, it forces them to take action. In contrast, less distressing or less painful situations can create less urgency and more comfort. And that's where complacency can set in. So that people, they're not happy, but they're not miserable. They're not distressed, but they're not overjoyed and elated. And with that in mind, good is the enemy of the great, and great is the enemy of the best. And when I was talking about that with both Lauren and Dr. Julie, they were talking about how much it's important to understand what you don't want in life and what you do want. You can't just understand just one half of that equation, because quite often if you create an enemy for you to pull away from and to run away from, that can help you work far harder than you just have goals to work towards as well. And I know from my experience that pain is definitely one hell of a motivator and a driver for change, because you can be just comfortable enough to be complacent. You can have a job that you don't really enjoy, but it pays you enough money, so your lifestyle outside of that is okay. But you know that if that job got worse, and for example, you had to work with a colleague that you really hated, that might be enough to push you over the edge to go and make a change and pursue something you really much rather do. In the same vein, you might be in a relationship where you're kind of not as in love as you were at the start, and it's not great, but you're wondering, oh, I'm not sure who else is out there for me. I'm not sure if if I could find somebody that is as comfortable, that fits into my routine and my schedule and understands me and knows me. But that's complacency, that's comfort. And the Regent Beta Paradox is true, because if that relationship turned sour and you had a really bad fight and they said something really hurtful or they raised their hands to you, you would be in a situation where it would be distressing enough for you to leave and move away from it. So you definitely need to consider these things. You can end up in a place where you're comfortably numb but not happy, and that for me is a place that you don't want to be. So you really need to really identify what you want, of course you do, but also think about what you don't want, and don't allow yourself to be comfortably numb and just okay. like I'm just about okay, or it's a little bit unpleasant, but it's unpleasant enough that I can deal with it. It's not so unpleasant that I need to move away from it. Sometimes you can actually create situations where you make it worse, so you have to leave. And like that's where sometimes you get entrepreneurs talking about like burning your boats in your day job and stuff like that as well. And while I'm a bit more conservative than that, I think with my mindset, I certainly think that some people could benefit from that. Number four, and I think this is a life hack for many of us, listen hard, make people feel heard, you might learn something. In fact, let's take away the might. You will learn something. Listen hard, make people feel heard, you will learn something. The Dalai Lama said a version of this, and he said, when you talk, you're only repeating what you already know. But if you listen, you may learn something new. And that is such a good position to be in, because anything that's coming out of my mouth at this moment in time is something that I've already considered or thought about before, and it's coming to the fore now. Whereas if I'm asking a question of a guest, or I'm talking to a friend or a colleague or a client, whoever it is, the chances are they're probably going to tell me something I might not have heard before, or there's more of a chance of that than me saying something brand new and completely novel. And I definitely think it's a skill in terms of listening I've doubled down on as a podcast host. But even before that, if I look at my life away from recording, I was always the friend or the business contact who people felt listened to by and heard by. And quite often that led to them opening up more and sharing more with me than they do with others. And in my day job, if I think about the sales career where I've really kind of started to reap the benefits and the rewards fiscally of the skill set that I built over the last 8 or 9 years, listening and understanding what a client or a potential client has told you is so, so important. I write it down, I follow up in my email with it afterwards as well to kind of reiterate it. And making sure that you respond accordingly, because the number of people that, and this is a tiny bit of a tangent when it comes to like work, I see so many business development professionals or even people that are selling a product or a service as a single business or a one-man band, they just present the solution that they think they're always going to present. Whereas if you really listen to somebody and you hear it, at least when you present your solution back, you can use their language and their pain points and match it to some of the things that you're going to help and solve for them. Whereas I think some people are like, they're almost listening as a chore and as a rote requirement that they know they sort of need to do, and they just nod along and go with it. But they're not actually taking it on board, because whatever somebody says, they're going to do whatever they're planning to do anyway. And that's a really, really negative, unfortunate thing to do. And I think, like, again, if I try and use another example, if I'm thinking about in a podcast example, in my early days as a host, if I was a little bit more nervous with a guest, I knew typically what kind of questions or topics I wanted to cover next. And I would maybe be like listening, and knowing even if the guest said something interesting that I would really like to probe into, because I knew what I was wanting to ask next, you're thinking more about that than thinking about what they said. So you might miss an opportunity to go super deep. And that's an area that I've really, really improved on as a host, because while I've maybe got 5 or 6 different areas I know I want to go with a guest, if the guest brings up something deeper and newer that I've maybe not heard before, or it just makes me curious to understand why they've got that thought process or why that experience had such an impact on them, I ask the follow-up question because I've really listened to what they've said. And I think you notice that in some of my more recent interviews, I'm talking maybe in the last 80 90 100, you can hear the guest be like, oh well, and then they go forward and they explain it in further depth, so we get more from them than if I maybe just moved on to the next item on the agenda that I was considering was important. So really do recommend that you listen hard and listen with intent. It's a wonderful skill, and then base your response based on what you've heard rather than what's on your agenda or what you've been talking about. I don't know where I heard this before, but so many people listen with the intent of thinking about what they're going to say next, and that is not something that's a powerful trait. Number five, create a gap between the stimulus and the response. Many guests have talked about the concept of a gap between something that happens to you and the actions or emotions which you choose afterwards. Dr. Aria was probably one of the people that was the most profound about this, and he was able to frame it in situations that he's used it, including going into his kitchen and his wife of the time telling him that she was pregnant with another man's baby that she had fallen in love with and she was going to leave him for. And when you're able to create a gap between what happens to you and how you respond, that gives you far more power. Now, that's the most extreme possible example that you can think of, but we all encounter this throughout the day. The email that we get in work from somebody and you just want to be like, fuck off, or you want to be like, what are you talking about? You're an idiot. And you want to just respond viscerally, giving yourself the opportunity to take your time and choose how you do that. Personal experience for me, I definitely think the gap can close too quickly when you're stressed and you're busy and you're trying to get things done. But you need to make a decision or take an action that's not done too emotionally. And that's not to try and all be robotic and all be like running as some sort of machine that has built in their process time and space. But if you can allow yourself that, it's so, so helpful. And more recent guest Lauren Johnson actually gave us some questions that you can ask yourself that buys you time in that gap. So anything that extends the gap is positive. So here's just one that she recommended. What typically helps in moments like these? So like, what typically helps you when this has come up before? That's a helpful one as well. But Lauren pairs it with a deadly question, which is on the shadow side of this. And it helps you to ask, what typically hurts me in times like these? What's caused me trouble in times like these before? So in that gap, you can think about, what have I done before when I've handled news or a situation or a stimulus like this well? And what's happened when I've dealt with this badly as well? And again, like we were saying with the Regent Beta paradox, thinking of the negative and the shadow side of things is a really helpful way to understand what might be a better thing to do so that you avoid the pain of previous, so that you avoid the challenge that you had previously. And anything that allows you some additional time to reflect and consider what comes next is a superpower, because we're all hyper-stimulated. There's been the prevalence and the rise of ADHD diagnoses, and a lot of the terms that are associated with ADHD are overstimulus. But I think even people that have not had a diagnosis like that with in that kind of neurological range, they can understand that in today's day and age, we are getting hit with so much more stimulus than our ancestors ever were. So no wonder our brains are struggling to control that. But if you're using the time between something happening to you and your time to respond well and efficiently, and bringing up those ideas and those situations where you can decide how to respond in the most positive way for you, yourself, and others around you, then that's a really, really good skill. And for me, when I'm thinking about that at the grand old age of 31, I really think that I am giving myself the best possible chance to respond in a way that's going to serve future Colin rather than just in the moment, the temptation after a particular stimulus or a particular thing that happens to you. Sometimes can be like, let's get a quick win or a quick jab in or a quick bite back. Let's instead try and be stoic, try and be calm, ask yourself some internal questions and then act accordingly. Number six, being consistent doesn't matter if you're not improving. Everyone talks about consistency. I talk about consistency. I talk about being relentless. I really feel like I am that in a lot of domains of my life. However, if you're not improving the quality of your consistency and the quality of what you're doing on a consistent basis, then it's very, very difficult to see benefits. I certainly think consistency is like one of the first battles like to tick off and like one of the first habits of people that are quite successful. But when you iterate on the actions that you're doing and improve them, then you're far more likely to gain the benefits of the consistency as they add up over time. And I'll relate it to a podcast example. If I just kept doing what I was doing for the first 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 episodes, then the show wouldn't have grown to the extent that it has, because I had to improve the microphone. I had to improve the quality of the software I was using. I had to improve the fact that I was doing some in-person episodes once the C19 restrictions eased. I had to improve the quality of my questioning. I had to improve the quality of my listening. All these things had to happen. I had to introduce clips and promos to get the podcast out there more. I had to get a thumbnail editor so YouTube looked better. I had to get all these different things to improve the quality. While, of course, I was still consistent in terms of recording a minimum of one episode per week and releasing every single Sunday. And occasionally, if I've got another one, bang it in on a Wednesday, which I have this week. I think you've just had Dr. Meg J. And that is so, so important. And when I was speaking to Chris Burns and David Hatt on the recent Stand on the Shoulders of Giants episode, David was laughing that a lot of people will maybe look at somebody's physique and be like, I've been training for 5 years as well. How has she or he got such a good physique? the consistency of your training might have been the same, but your quality of your training wasn't as good, or the quality of your nutrition is good, whatever it was. You maybe were applying yourself consistently, showing up to the gym 5 days a week, but maybe you were training like a pansy and not taking anything to failure and not stimulating the right muscles, or maybe you were just doing a bro split and it was poor quality, or maybe your protein intake wasn't high enough in your nutrition, or maybe you were tracking your calories Monday to Friday and then weekends were a total free-for-all. Maybe you just weren't eating enough. There's so many things that could have been part of that in terms of the quality of your approach that means that just because you've gone to the gym the same number of times as somebody does not mean that you're going to equate the same level of result. So really, really think about this. You can be as consistent as you want, but over time, let's improve the quality of the actions that we're taking, and then the consistency becomes far more of a compounder and it far more of a driver forward. There's lots of C's in that, but we all know I like my alliteration. Number 7, what I do outside the podcast impacts the podcast. My training, my reading, my content consumption, my conversations, my socializing, and who I interact with, how hard I push or what I achieve in work, the experiences that I have and the different events and things that I go to, all of these add up and they help me achieve 2 main things, I would say. Firstly, they make me feel good and fulfilled and energized. And secondly, they make me more interesting. They make me more knowledgeable. They make me more experienced and have more to discuss and bring to the fore and share. When I think about all the things I do outside of the podcast, they 100% add in to my ability to be a better podcast host. One, in terms of like my energy levels and like how I feel and how I look and how I show up. But of course, it adds from the perspective of I'm going to be a much more interesting person to talk to for my guests because of the things that I've done away from just recording on a weekly basis. And I think this maybe links into that whole win offline to win online side of things. Because the stuff that you're doing away from the 1 hour of podcasting really, really adds up. And that can be the same in whatever domain that you're applying yourself in listening to this. Think about the things that you do that enable you to show up. So for example, what you do outside of your relationship impacts your relationship. Are you looking after your body? Are you looking after your mind? Then you're probably going to be a nicer person to spend time with, to live with, to go out on a date with, because you're looking after those other areas. What you do outside of your career impacts your career. If you're on it from Friday afternoon through till Sunday morning, then you're probably going to be pretty rough Monday, Tuesday. You're probably not going to be functioning at your full capacity. It's something we all need to think about. What you do outside of the pursuit or the thing that you care about is massively important, and it definitely impacts it in a really, really important way. So when I'm thinking about how I can become the best possible podcast host that I can be, there's lots of other things I need to tick off first. I need to be nailing my sleep and my training. I need to be reading widely so that my vocabulary, my ideas are churning over. My content consumption, what I put into my eyes and my ears, is so, so important when it comes to, one, potential guests that I'm thinking about, potential topics that I'm thinking about, or really just ways that other people are verbalizing things that make me think, oh, well, maybe I can have a conversation around that, or maybe I should be considering that as well. And then I've mentioned socializing here and like different events that I go to, but that's where you gain different experiences, different ideas, different perspectives on things, and different things that you can talk about. And storytelling is a massive part of keeping people's interest. And I recently went to the Warehouse Project in Manchester to see Camel Fat and Ben Bomber, and it was so much fun. And I've had so many new friends I met through it, and many friends I went with that were like reminiscing on the stories from it as well. And it just makes me more fun to tell people what I've been up to and what and finding out what they've been up to and bonding over a love of music, whatever it is. Doing more things that are outside of the typical scope of things that you do can be helpful too. So while I'm a stickler for routine, I've definitely seek out some novelty within my week too. So trying to do interesting things to become interesting. Number 8, bundling is a time management and self-development hack. If you've not heard of bundling before, it's doing things with a positive reward while doing something that's non-negotiable that lacks the same return. So something that just needs to be done, pair it with something that is giving you something alongside it. That might be you listen to a podcast while you're doing chores like cleaning or folding clothes and putting away washing, whatever it is, or scrubbing the dishes. Listen to a podcast. It's calling a friend on the drive to work or on your commute, or it's reading a book on a long train journey. Pairing these things is not multitasking, because it's layering two things together, one that needs to be done and something alongside it that's adding some sort of value or enjoyment for you. And these things, typically, they need to be things that complement each other. They can't take away from the other thing. So, like, you can't wash the dishes while going for a walk. You can't dry the dishes while you're working out at the gym. Like, whatever it is, you cannot pair things that are in contrast. For me, it's scheduling things in as well. So I'll try and think things through that can go beyond that. So, for example, I know that when I was doing my last photo shoot prep in 2022, most of my catch up with friends, guess what they were? They were gym sessions or they were walks, because I was trying to hit a massive step count and I was making sure I was training. These are things that are going to happen anyway. So I might as well supercharge them and ensure that I'm being social and enjoy it too. I know I need to train. I know I need to walk. So I might as well make sure that I'm doing those things too. Bundling really, really helps you to use your time more memorably, but also more productively. So you're more likely to remember on Sunday night when you were folding your clothes and putting them away in your wardrobe, and then laying out the ones that you were wearing on Monday morning. You're more likely to remember the podcast that you listened to, or the YouTube video you had on in the background, or whatever it was, or the phone call you had with your friend when you were doing that, than if you were to just do the thing that needs to be done but doesn't have any form of like positive feedback loop other than thank God I did that. So use that to get more done, but also importantly to try and use that time as wisely as possible. Take a quick drink and we'll jump on to number 9. Number 9, there's been a shift from aiding victims to aiding everyone who claims victimhood. Now, this has been a trend that we've seen people act less genuinely and not take any action that is positive. And instead, they've either embraced victimhood or not been sure what to do because people are claiming victimhood in a situation that we don't understand. There's a gentleman online called James Cantor, and he's a clever gentleman, and he explained it very well. And he said that shifting from doing good to looking good has led to an awful lot of virtue signaling. This form of interaction is now Western culture, and it's predominantly what we see online. People would rather be seen to be a good person than actually being one. And that is a terrible, terrible trend. And I think it's getting more and more prevalent, although I'm glad to see a number of people getting called out on it as well. But when people have genuine circumstances that merit them feeling like a victim or a survivor of a situation, those people deserve support. And I think in the modern age, people have realized that's the case. And from a resource gathering perspective, or a sympathy gathering perspective, or a support gathering perspective, more and more people have decided to act like they are indeed a victim, and they haven't merited it if you actually looked at their circumstances. And there's a kind of like idea that a lot of people who are the most vocal about victimhood or helping victims are often the people that are the biggest hypocrites as well. There's that hilarious example I saw online where the singer and rapper Lizzo, who's publicly for a long time championed being like plus sized and quote unquote body positive, she's now facing 3 different legal actions from former dancers that worked for her, who she was body shaming and abusing over their weight and their image. So it's really funny. You see these people that are held up as beacons of, oh, she's so positive, she's such a empowering role model for overweight people. And it turned out that while she's quite happy to be massively overweight herself, she's shaming dancers who work for, or allegedly shaming dancers who work for her, for their weight and telling them to lose weight. It's a hilarious situation. And I think it really links into the fact that a lot of people would rather be seen to be virtuous with some of their statements, but I would always say know them by their deeds and their actions, not their words. Often the biggest charlatans are the ones that are shouting the loudest and visible in plain sight. And that is something you absolutely do not want to be. And it's something that I hope we see less of in society, but it has definitely been enabled more through social media. Like, look at the people that go up to a homeless person with like a bag of crisps, or they film themselves giving them money, and you're like, oh my God, can you not have just done that act without like bringing that person into the situation in terms of like posting on social media about it? And while if I, like, for example, at the time of recording tonight, I'm going to a charity dinner for the British Red Cross, and I will share that I'm there for the British Red Cross while I'm donating to the charity. That's to encourage other people to do charitable acts, whereas a lot of people are posting about charity and like acts that they're doing to signal their virtue, but without actually knowing that they should be trying to encourage other people to be virtuous as well, rather than gaining the brownie points and the credit for how virtuous they are. One of the ways that it quite important to understand this is the element of the status game, which I spoke about with Will Storer on the podcast back in probably 3 or 4 months ago now. And Will was explaining that in whatever area of life, everyone is playing a relative game of status where they want to understand where they're at in the hierarchy within their chosen field. And even within volunteering organizations that he's worked within, in like different call centers to take people's calls when they're distressed or struggling. I can't quite remember the charity he worked for. I think it was the Samaritans. He said there was still an element of competition to be seen to be the most virtuous within that, but that was like a positive thing in terms of encouraging people to do more better things. But online, there's almost like a competition to be seen as the victim. No, I'm the most oppressed character. I'm the one that has it the hardest. And that is a terrible, terrible place for the world to be. So let's hope that we move further away from that in 2023 and beyond. Number 10, whatever age you are now, your future self would love to be it. And I certainly feel that way at 31. Last year with turning 30, there was quite a lot of occasion about it. There was a lot of feeling like a milestone. 31 is just a very meh age and doesn't really mean an awful lot, but I'm not letting it get me down in any way. And there's a lesson from James Clear that relates to this, and it reminded me of this because 31 is quite an uncelebrated age. There wasn't the same celebrations, there wasn't the same occasions as my 30th last year. And what James Clear wrote was, most people do not consider 65 to be a young age, but when you're 75, you'd love to be 65 and regain those years. Few people would describe 35 as your youth, but in your mid-50s, your mid-30s will seem like the young you. So today is a great opportunity, no matter your age. And that's something that I definitely reminded myself in the last month or so, because looking back in a few years, today will seem like the time when I was young. I'll seem like, oh, remember when I was 31 and I didn't have this responsibility and I was able to do this and this and I had the freedom and the finances, whatever it was, to go and do this. There's still so much potential. And if you think about that, this is the moment when you could have started something early. So for example, I started the podcast at 28. That seems like quite a long time ago now, and I'm really glad I started at 28 rather than 31. So really think about this moment in time as a moment to start something, a moment you're going to look back on. And you know, when you're 65, I'd probably kill to go back to being 31 and have all these years left to live, all this time to spend and choose intentionally. So that's a really, really important reminder for me. And the way that he finished that that kind of idea off was, the moment in front of you right now is a good one, make the most of it. And I've got that written in my phone notes. I look at it quite regularly. And when I was kind of being a bit non-fussed about turning 31, that's helped me. The moment in front of you right now is a good one, make the most of it. Your future self would love to be the age you are right now. Number 11, optimization is not perfection. So many people think about trying to have the perfect routine, the perfect diet, the perfect training plan, the perfect logo and branding for your podcast or for your website or for your business. Let's think about your morning routine. I would much rather optimize my morning routine, but I know it won't be perfect. It won't be perfect in line with all the scientific literature or all the different things I could do. There's going to be things that aren't quite ideal, but I'm going to optimize it as much as possible. And by that, I mean optimizing my efficiency in terms of maximizing the return on the time that I'm spending on something. And it's not striving for like the perfect process or the perfect outcome each time, but it is striving to make the most of that opportunity to get a return and feel value from what I've done. So optimization for my morning routine, for example, will differ depending on what I've done the night before. It'll depend on what I've got to do that day. It'll depend on my circumstances, and it'll dictate what optimized looks like. So if in this current period of time, it's been so much darker in the morning, it's been harder to get up, optimized morning routine for that moment in time might be that I'm trying to desperately get up as early as possible and get as much light, getting the lights on overhead, getting myself outside into the street lights to try and refresh myself more. And that's going to be more important and more rewarding than in the summer when it's an awful lot easier to do that. So optimizing at this time of year is different from other times of year. Optimizing your training will look radically different when you're prepping for a photo shoot or a physique show or a holiday, versus when you're just training because it's an important habit that you've got and you've got it focused on at that moment in time, and you know it's part of your day. Optimization for your diet will radically differ from time to time, whether you're trying to gain weight, trying to lose weight, whether you're trying to improve your skin health, whatever it is, optimizing these different areas is going to differ periodically, and you need to make the best of the situation and do what you can to excel at that moment in time rather than trying to be perfect at all times. So I think the optimization is something to think about rather than perfection. So what can I do right now that is optimal in the circumstance that I'm in? Again, I'll go back to that morning routine example. Somebody was asking me about this the other day in work. When I'm traveling with in Manchester or London or Leeds, wherever I am, and I was saying, oh, well, like my morning routine is obviously different. I don't have a foam roller or resistance bands with me. I don't have like everything that I have in my flat. But what I do have is I can drink my water, have my supplements, and I can get out for a walk, which is probably the most important thing in my morning in terms of motion is lotion for me, for my brain and my mind and my body. And if I can tick that off and come back and get changed and ready to go into the office or go to a meeting or go to a site, whatever I'm doing, then I've kind of ticked the main boxes. And that for me is optimizing my routine when I'm overnight on a Wednesday in Manchester rather than waking up in my house in Glasgow and able to do everything that I normally do. So really, really think about that. Think about how can you optimize what you're pursuing at that moment in time and what's available to you rather than how can I perfect this and follow through on a really rigid process. Right, number 12, second last one, fight up front. This is a concept I learned from Dr. Julie Gerner, and I know I've used her name a few times during this episode. If you haven't listened to that one, I'm sure you should definitely go and do that. It's quite funny. Somebody was saying to me, oh, the retainers that she must be on for the hedge fund clients must be massive. And I was like, well, yes, by nature of having a podcast, I basically was able to interview and learn for an hour from somebody that would cost thousands of dollars to book a one-to-one consultation with over the phone or over Zoom or StreamYard, whatever we used. And that's a really, really cool part of podcasting. But it's also a really cool part of the fact that we can listen to podcasts. And the whole idea of the Stand on the Shoulders of Giants episode with David and Chris was the amount of information that we have access to for free or for like £12 for a self-development book is absolutely insane. Because like genuinely, if you've listened to that episode with Dr. Julie, the combined value we would have got is literally worth thousands of pounds, which is mad. But onto the point at hand, fight up front. Julie talked about setting your standards early. And the example she gave was if you were being kidnapped and thrust into a van, the best time to fight is before you end up in the van, because anything that happens thereafter is only going to be worse. So you'd be better to be like really badly injured or hurt, trying to desperately not get into the van than going into the van willingly, because everything after that is going to be so much worse. So set your standards early, push back immediately if a line has been crossed. If something is out of whack early on, you need to let it be known that that's the case. The word fight is clearly a confrontational and a visceral word. However, it is the correct term in terms of when you think about you have to step up, and whether you deliver that in a really aggressive way is another matter, but you can just be verbally strict and firm that no, this is not acceptable. And one of the examples we talked about was something that I learned from Dr. Taylor Burrows a long time ago in episode 70 something, when we were talking about dating and being intentional with your romantic relationships. She said that the number of women that get annoyed later in a relationship about a man's behavior when it comes to maybe liking girls' photos on social media, like that are maybe like bikini photos or things that are quite explicit. If you didn't raise that early on in a relationship, then that's a problem. If you didn't raise early on that your girlfriend being friends with her ex or spending time with guys that you're not comfortable with, if you didn't raise that early, you have no right to raise it further down the line because you let that slide earlier on. So fighting up front is a case of not necessarily always fighting, but being really clear on what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable and what works for you early on. And that isn't just in dating, that's in so many different areas of life. Set out your boundaries and what you are willing to tolerate. Otherwise, you can't expect things to get better down the line. And you're much more likely to have a proper fight with friends, family, relationships, and partners if you don't address things early on and set out your stall in terms of what is suitable and what isn't suitable. Number 13, last one to finish off this little solo episode that we've done. Don't wait until you've decided until you start applying yourself. What I really mean by this is that people don't often know the thing, and that's in quotation marks. They want to do Like, what is it they really truly want to do? And they don't know the exact area they want to work in, the area they want to spend their time in. They don't know the exact perfect type of training they want to do or goal they want to work towards. And that's fine, because most of us don't ever know 100%, or they don't know for a very, very long time. And if you spend your time thinking about that and considering it, or analyzing the different opportunities, you embrace paralysis by analysis because you're waiting for the perfect opportunity or the time that will be ideal. That's a trap. It's understandable because everyone wants to spend their time in a fulfilling way. But if you never get started just doing something and you're always waiting until you've decided before you start applying yourself in whatever domain you're in, then you're missing out on so many opportunities, because it's not always the job or the career or the business itself which brings fulfillment. Often, if I look at my career and my life, simply getting good at something, building a skill set, achieving progression, hitting milestones, that feels great. For me, if I look at my sales career, did it really matter that it was in insurance sales? Did it matter it's now in furniture sales that I'm doing really well, like building a skill set? I'm achieving progression. I can see the fiscal reward. I can hit milestones. I can break records. I can bring other people with me in terms of working with friends or giving employment to somebody that I know has great opportunities as well. And that's only possible because of the growth that I've been able to be a part of. That feels amazing. But is my thing, like my absolute driver, furniture for student accommodation and build to rent developments? No, of course it's not. It's not. That's just not the case. But I can tell you what is. Progressing in something, being part of something, applying myself. That's fulfilling. That is really, really important. And while all that's happening, while you are applying yourself in whatever field you're in at this moment in time or whatever works for you, that will open up new opportunities. It will open up new avenues that might well allow you to find the dream thing or the perfect job or the perfect business or that opportunity that is just right for you. And again, I'm going to harp back to my experience. While I've been building up my skill set as a sales director and a business development manager and an account manager and somebody that wins deals and get things over the line and does presentations, I've done sales coaching. I've done sales consultancy. I've supported individuals improve their own performance. I've built the podcast on the side in terms of, because a lot of the skill set that I built from having meetings with managing directors or finance directors or people that are really quite high up, that's kind of what I use to apply myself in the podcast space. The research that I used to do on big companies when I was writing my cold emails or my cold video scripts that I was sending to them, that's very similar to what I do for an upcoming podcast guest. I think about what would I like to ask them. I look at their website. I look at their social media. I look at their different areas, and I'm not going to give away too many more secrets. But I learned this ability to research and to find preparation in advance, and then I learned how to ask the questions in the meeting to guide them towards answers and different topics that I was interested in talking about with them. And that's exactly what I end up doing with the podcast. So the skill that I built in my day job might well help me build a podcast which becomes the thing in the future. It might well be the thing that I've worked on, like, almost by accident, albeit I would say intentionally I've worked on my skill set, has tipped over. So if you are somebody right now that is languishing, that is waiting, or is unsure of what the thing might be, just apply yourself really hard in a few different areas and see what it builds up for you. See what it creates for you, because it might well lead to the thing. It might well lead to something that really, really matters and puts you in a different position that's better than you're in just now. And like I say, me applying myself in a sales career across a number of different industries has opened up so much for me that has made me somebody that feels fulfilled, feels happy, but also has now more options. I'm doing more sales consultancy. I'm doing more podcasting, and I'm still excelling in my career. Does it matter that I'm in the furniture industry, which isn't like something that I'm like hyper excited about? I'm passionate enough about it to sell it. I'm passionate about it to learn about it and be able to talk about the products and the different services we offer. But it's not something I like wake up every morning and be like, oh, I'm so excited about furniture today. So think about that. And at the age of 31, I think if I had heard that when I was younger, it would have reassured me to keep going and to keep pushing, which is something that I think at this time of year, and I was saying this on Instagram the other day, we're in November. So many people are ready to just coast all the way through to the festive season when we start having so many amazing social things. But if you're somebody that's listening to this, please do not coast. Please do keep pushing forward. Keep applying yourself, because I really think there's gold and there's merit from doing the work when others are sleepy and falling off. But that is a wrap on 13 thoughts at the grand old age of 31. I hope you've enjoyed this slightly shorter, slightly different style of solo episode. Of course, I did it for episode 156 for my 30th birthday, and the plan will probably be to do it for my 32nd birthday. We'll see how many I decide to do at that. Maybe I'll do 23 things at 32, or maybe it'll be all 32. Who knows? We'll soon find out. But thank you so much for your support. Thank you for listening to the show. Please do pass on an episode that you enjoy to a friend. Help us keep growing. Help us keep pushing forward. I've got some amazing episodes coming up. Next week is Chris Marable, who reversed his aging by 33%. And then the week after that, I have the brilliant master of self-mastery, Ross Harkness. And I can't keep having these guests unless you guys keep supporting me. So please do so. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.